Hey, it's Bronze and Modern Gods. I'm John, and that dashing young man over there is Richard. Hello, Richard.
Hi, John. How you doing?
I am doing fantastic. We've got a great show today. We've got the 25-year rule heading back to 1996. Our underrated books of the week with a little Alan Moore knowing the score, maybe a little subby, a little Namor action. We have our main topic this week, Marvel versus the founding fathers of the Marvel Universe. What is going on? Disney and Marvel are suing the people that made them who they are today. But is that really what's happening? We'll tell you a little bit about it with our insight. But first, it's our hot book of the week. Richard, what is it?
Our hot book of the week is Hit Monkey number one. I'm sorry. It's such a great title. Hit Monkey number one is a Marvel property. It's coming out as a TV show. That's the big buzz about this particular issue or comic book. The trailer dropped this week and it looks pretty cool. It's all about this Japanese monkey who's a snow monkey whose tribe is slaughtered. He joins forces with the ghost of an American assassin, and together they begin killing their way through the Yakuza underworld.
What's happening?
It sounds like a great, I mean, the trailer looked awesome. I have to admit, I have not read this book. I have seen this book in a number of lists over the past year or so, because I think there are rumors about this TV show coming. And it's looked interesting and it's looked intriguing, but I just never dipped into it. So I'm really curious to see what this does. And is this an MCU property? Is he going to be, you know, one of the new Avengers, for example?
It has some sort of MCU tie-in because Lady Bullseye is in that trailer,
right,
from Daredevil. So while you're looking for this in the bins, you might want to look out for Daredevil Volume 2, issue number 111 as well, because that book has really seen the spike as well. I've never heard of this book before this last couple of weeks. I know you've seen it in the list. I have not. I have heard of Gorilla Man from Agents of Atlas. Mm-hmm. And this has nothing to do with that. Is this creator owned? It can't be. Did the creator of Hit Monkey sign over all the rights to Marvel? What's happening, Richard? I'm scared. Hold me.
I wish I knew more about this. Other than the fact that, you know, that it's got enough buzz that a lot of things have been optioned, right? You know, it's one step above that to go from option to a trailer and having, you know, a release date of November 17th. So yeah, this is coming. This is real. This is happening. And I'm interested to see how it's placed in the MCU.
You also have to have a huge caveat here with these MCU animated series on Hulu. MODOK, anyone remember that? Did not exactly set the world on fire. This does look infinitely more interesting than the MODOK trailer, where everybody, I think, despite Patton Oswalt being attached, saw the MODOK trailer and went, ugh.
Yeah. No, this has what every American wants to see in their comic book TV show: violence
and monkeys.
monkeys with guns. It's a great combination, to be honest with you. You know, howler monkey with guns.
How's this book selling?
That's the interesting thing. This book has had very little movement up until recently. The last 9.8 sale was in November of 2020, and it was for $44.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the last 9.6 sale in September, you know, this month, for $450. So, you know, there are 15 9.8s out there out of 47 graded books. So, you know, there aren't a whole lot of them out there, and people may be hoarding them, waiting for this thing to actually air.
It's interesting. It kind of has a little bit of a Adam Legend of the Blue Marvel kind of vibe in terms of the print run, mm-hmm, and demand. So, like I said, I never heard of this, never saw it. Head in the sand, maybe an ostrich. I don't know.
No, it's one of those things you look back and hindsight's 2020. You know, 9.8s for $44. I should have been buying those all day long. You know, with the buzz around it. Now I'm not even sure what a 9.8 is going to sell for. I'll be curious to see the next one that goes out.
All right, you guys excited for Hit Monkey? Let us know in the comments below. And now something I know a lot more about, our main topic, Marvel versus the founding fathers of the Marvel Universe. Richard, this story broke this week. This week, Marvel sued a bunch of the founding fathers of Marvel Comics, including Larry Lieber, Stan's little brother, the estates of Steve Ditko, Don Heck, Gene Colan, and Don Rico. Now, why these names? Well, Larry Lieber wrote the first stories featuring Ant-Man, Iron Man, and Thor. And you have Don Heck, who helped create the Black Widow and a little bit of Iron Man. He drew the first Iron Man as well. You have Gene Colan, who created the Falcon and Blade along with Stan Lee. And of course, Steve Ditko's estate, who created Doctor Strange and Spider-Man. And let's not leave poor Don Rico out. Don Rico was a writer from the Golden Age of Marvel who did some work in the early Marvel universe in the 60s. He wrote that first Black Widow story with Iron Man. So this lawsuit is actually in response to Larry Lieber and the estates filing copyright termination notices to Marvel. So if you create something in a lot of industries, creative industries, literary, music, books, things like that, after 35 years, in most cases, due to the copyright law, you can send a legal notice to that company saying, all right, you had your time with this property. It's mine now. I want it back. Does it always work? Not really. What this usually is, and I have a little insight to this because of my day job. I sometimes have heard and dealt very obliquely with copyright termination lawsuits. This is a way to get the copyright holder's attention. Hey, dash, right upside the head. Right. I created this for you. You need to pay me some money or give it back to me or promote it more or do something, market it more. You've let it lie fallow for too long. So we saw this happen with Jack Kirby's estate a few years ago. They did the same thing. They filed copyright termination notices on a lot of characters because I don't know if you realize Jack Kirby created a few characters for
Marvel. A couple.
And that really spurred Disney to get off their duffs and give that estate what we can assume is a huge, huge settlement and co-creator credit on all of the movies and books going forward, much like what happened with Siegel and Schuster and Superman over at DC. So I would not be surprised if this happens the same way, if this goes down the same way. Now, Marvel, of course, is going to go in claiming everything was done work for hire.
Right.
Which means you knew what you were getting into when you wrote this book or you drew it and you signed the back of that check that had the little legal verbiage above it saying by signing and cashing this check, you agree that this work was done for hire. Well, it's kind of spurious sometimes in court. Richard, I can calm you down because I can see the fear in your eyes.
I was so conflicted when I saw this because you're gonna sue these people. These people are the people that made comic books.
I'm not defending a huge faceless corporation here. This is how it's done. Mm-hmm. When a copyright termination notice is filed, you have to respond in some way, mm-hmm. whether it's negotiation, whether it's conceding or countersuit. It's business, frankly. But don't panic. I don't think this means the end of these characters in comics or movies and they can never be used again. They're going to settle. Marvel's going to settle with these people. It's, you know, like they did with Jack's estate. Yeah. And it'll be kind of nice to see Larry Lieber, you know, this perennial underdog of the Marvel founding fathers, get a big payout while he's still alive to enjoy it. The Ditko estate.
Well, that's, you know, also, you know, some of these estates are also corporations, right? So you've got, you know, this giant corporation being Disney in battle with a smaller corporation, the estate of Steve Ditko, for example. Mm-hmm. Steve isn't going to get the money. Steve is no longer with us. So this is really going to the people who control his estate. I agree with you. I think they will, Marvel will, or DC, I'm sorry, Disney will eventually settle, and this will be kind of forgotten. But I don't think it's going to threaten any of the movies or properties that are coming down the line for Marvel. Disney has too much invested in the MCU and the properties related to it to have any of that threatened. So if there's a potential of a threat, they're going to squash it by settling.
And it's not a good look. It's just not a good look to sue a bunch of, you know, men who made you what you are today, basically. And in the case of Larry Lieber, to sue a man in his 80s who's living in New York, you're probably in a one bedroom apartment scraping it by on a pension. It's just not a good look. Also, yeah. See this Steve Ditko Doctor Strange shirt if you're watching on YouTube. Do you think the estate got anything for that?
Well, that's a good question.
We don't know what the deal is. If the Ditko estate, or even if Steve Ditko, when he was alive, renegotiated. But traditionally, licensing and merch, the artist got nothing. That's what helped spur on Image, the creation of Image. Okay. Todd and Jim Lee, they saw their artwork being, you know, pimped out on T-shirts and posters, and they weren't getting a dime. And they weren't even getting a thank you. That was, you know, Todd McFarlane's big complaint was, my dad retired and he got a gold watch. You know, you guys don't give me anything. So that's my Todd McFarlane, by the way.
It sounded just like him. It's scary.
So, gosh, I don't know how to say this. Is there a bad guy here? I don't think there's a bad guy. Yeah. Business.
This is business. It's none of this is personal. Yeah. This is two corporations battling it out for, a reasonable share of the pie. And I think the pie is big enough. You know, you're talking like Thor. Yeah. It's big enough for both parties to come out with some kind of amicable settlement that will be in the both of their best interests.
Pie. Delicious. All right. Well, what's interesting is that 35-year rule when it comes to copyright termination, because we're getting to the point now where there's characters from 1986 coming up for copyright termination. Could Jim Shooter conceivably file a copyright termination notice for The Beyonder, especially if Secret Wars is coming as a movie? This is the time to strike, Jim. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know the answers here. This is, by the way, I gotta say, as a disclaimer, this is pure 1000% speculation on our part.
Right. We claim that we don't claim any insider knowledge here. This is just us talking about it.
And I am not a lawyer by any stretch of the imagination. And Marvel, if you're looking to hire me, don't hold this against me. it's fun. It's fun to say, like when Conan O'Brien was fighting Jay Leno over the Tonight Show. It was all in the news, and you had David Letterman over here on the Late Show, just watching it, making fun of Jay. The line I love where he's like, you know, I don't have a dog in this fight. You guys may be wondering why I keep attacking Jay Leno over and over again. It's for one simple reason. It's fun.
Coco.
Oh, yeah. You know, 35-year rule.
What is there another rule that
I believe apply? There is a 25-year rule. Hey, these are getting smoother and smoother, aren't they?
Well, I'm glad to see you working on it.
Thank you. The 25-year rule is where we go back 25 years to that point where nostalgia hits. If you are 14 years old, for example, in 1996, this is probably the best comic book period of your life. It's kind of like SNL. The cast you grew up with is the one you love the most, right?
You're right. Absolutely right.
And you picked the book this week from 1996 to focus on, and it is what, Richard?
It's Avengers 400.
Oh, God.
History Repeats Itself is the name of the storyline. It's an oversized anniversary issue. Writer Mark Waid, art by Mike Waringo.
Okay, great creative team. This is right after the Bob Harris, Mike Diodato As you can see from the cover here, the Wasp is a mutated Wasp person now, and everything's extreme with three X's.
This is an interesting story in that the Avengers end up fighting, a lot of their big name villains. There's Thanos, the Absorbing Man, the Enchantress, Baron Zemo, Executioner. You got people like Namor making an appearance, the Black Panther, Spider-Man's in there, She-Hulk, everybody's in here. Quasar is in this book.
Well, there's a reason to buy it right there. Go on.
And it's this monstrous plot. They're defeating all these villains, and the villains come back as these shadow characters. Mm. And eventually it turns out it's something that Loki is doing. He's trying to open a portal to the dark dimension. Ooh. So the Avengers find out. They go back to Avengers headquarters, and they defeat Loki and save the universe yet again.
Just like issue one.
Yeah, a little bit.
But no circus was involved where the Hulk is hiding out as a clown juggling elephants. If you've ever read Avengers 1, it's hysterical.
So this book isn't very popular. The 9.84 is $75. So if you're interested in Avengers history, this may be something you want. 42 books on the census, of which 32 are 9.8. So 9.8s as a whole aren't common. But in terms of graded books, they are. So that makes sense. So, yeah, it's an interesting book from a historical standpoint. I don't think it stands up as one of those. It's no Secret Wars, for example. But, yeah, if you're an Avengers historian, this is a book that you want to come across.
2 issues later, chop, chop, canceled for Heroes Reborn.
Yeah, 1996 is littered with the corpses of Marvel series.
Canceled comic cavalcade, I call the year 1996. All right, the great choice. time for our underrated books of the week. I'll go first. My pick is in response to a comment we got a few weeks ago. I'm blanking on who made the comment, but they made a great suggestion. Hey, can you feature books that you just like personally as underrated books of the week, not books that you feel should be worth more? Well, this one's a combination of both of those, and that is Submariner number 57 from 1973. Now, in the early 1970s, Submariner creator Bill Everett was persuaded to return to his creation by Marvel editor-in-chief Roy Thomas, who was obviously a big Golden Age fan, loved the work of Bill Everett. Submariner was never an A-list title. It's kind of floundering. Flounder. At this time. So why not bring Bill Everett back and see what he can do? Well, fan reaction was split. Kind of like when Jack Kirby took over Captain America in 1975. They loved the art, especially Bill Everett, lush, beautiful pen and brush work. But suddenly the Submariner's characterization went from his royal Atlantean bearing, Namor the First, Imperius Rex, blah, 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 to the Submariner from the 1950s who would shout things like, Suffren Shattuck.
There's such a difference between the characters. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
You could argue, if you really were argumentative, that this Bill Everett Submariner was the real Submariner because he created the character.
That's true.
Stan's the one and Jack's the one that made him all royal and angry and pissy. Mm-hmm. Submariner was a bit of a brat when Bill Everett wrote him.
Fantastic Four number 4, his first appearance in the Silver Age. He was pretty much a brat.
Yeah.
And from that just kept on going.
The torch burned off his beard. You burn my beard off, I'm going to be upset.
That's right.
I love this Bill Everett run from the early 70s, but I love this issue in particular. By the way, you have a first appearance of Namorita, who Bill Everett created for this run. So there is some lasting impact from this run. But this issue, 57, features the first appearance since the 1950s of another classic Bill Everett drawn character, Venus. Yes, Venus was a book from the late 40s that started as a romance title. Mm-hmm. After a few issues, it turned into this adventure title where she was almost like a superhero goddess and she was fighting Loki and other gods. And then it takes a hard left turn into horror when the horror of the 50s was all the rage. It has one of the most iconic covers, pre-code horror covers of that entire age, Venus 19, where she's kissing the guy with the face peeled off in the skull by Bill Everett. After this appearance in Submariner 57, Venus was seen next in probably the greatest team book ever, Champions, number one, featuring Hercules. Then you guys may know Venus in more modern appearances as a member of Jimmy Woo's original Agents of Atlas. So the most recent high grade sale of this book was in February, and that was when a 9.4 sold for $200. The super high grades haven't traded hands since 2011, 2008. So kind of irrelevant looking at those, but I think Venus of the first Bronze Age, you know, she didn't even come back in the Silver Age. She didn't return until the Bronze Age appearance of Venus is somewhat significant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you're a big fan of the original Venus series. And
this is the part of the podcast every week where I ruminate on all the books I sold. I had a near complete run on Venus. I was missing two issues of the 19 issue run, and I sold them all like a moron. Hey, Richard, what's your pick this week?
Don't want to dwell on it, huh?
No, I want to move on.
My pick of the week is The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, number one from 1999. We had a conversation. I don't remember either. We did a live sale this past weekend. Someplace we were talking about Alan Moore, and it made me think about Alan Moore properties. You know, people know the common ones, the Swamp Things,
Watchmen, V for Vendetta.
Right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Watchmen is what I was trying to think of. He's famous for a variety of really, really good stories. Mm-hmm. You know, the books that he wrote are known for the story. And one of the books that he wrote is a book called The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And it had the sad misfortune in 2003 to have a movie made about it. Oh my goodness. Sean Connery, who is one of my favorite actors of all time. He got roped into making this movie as Alan Quartermain in the movie. And it was terrible. It was not a good representation of the book at all. So if you're judging the book potentially by that movie, just forget it ever happened. This is Highlander 2. Forget it ever happened. Okay. The book is all about Alan Moore wrote the book. Kevin O'Neill did the art, and it takes place in 1898. It's turn of the century kind of book, a Victorian era storyline, and it revolves around a number of famous people. Captain Nemo is in here, the Invisible Man, the Dr. Jekyll.
All public domain characters.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
No copyright termination notices here.
Right. And these characters are all brought together aboard, you know, Captain Nemo has the Nautilus, and it's a really good period piece. The artwork definitely evokes that turn of the century feel. It's a really interesting story about this team being brought together of extraordinary gentlemen. And they are brought together to stop, you know, for the betterment of the British Empire, mm-hmm. to stop Fu Manchu and Professor Moriarty. They have a gang war going. It's a powerful story. It's a good story. It's interesting to follow the universe that Alan Moore builds here. It's an alternative universe, kind of a steampunk feel to it. And it's a really good start to not only this particular series, but there are a number of spinoffs that happen around this different series that start from this. Unfortunately, Alan Moore and DC kind of had words over, you know, we were talking earlier about ownership. I think this is a good example of Alan Moore having some differences with DC.
Yeah, well, here's what happened is he signed on to do this for Jim Lee and Wildstorm
right
when he was independent. you know, because he famously said he would never work for DC again. Well, you know, halfway through his stint on this and Tom Strong and Top 10, the books he was doing for ABC, Jim Lee sold Wildstorm to DC. So all of a sudden, Alan Moore is a DC employee again, technically.
Yeah.
He honored the agreement that he signed to, and then he was out the door.
Right. This book moved to, it had a number of other publishers that it moved to after the stint with ABC. And, you know, it's I mean, the story got more and more fantastic every single iteration of it. Some of the main characters became immortal and they traveled through time. It gets a little bit far flung from that Victorian feel that I think was really, really cool in that first run.
Kevin O'Neill, the artist, famous, I think it's got to be an apocryphal story. It can't be true. He drew a book for Epic called Martial Law, which I loved, but the Comics Code Authority famously banned him from ever having a Comics Code approved book because of his art style, because they consider his art style so disturbing and unnerving to look at that he is the only artist to get banned by the Comics Code just because of the way he drew. Like I said, it's got an apocryphal story, but it's a great story.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it is. you know, this series also spawned another kind of famous issue 5 of the series.
Oh, Richard, you douche.
Issue 5 was actually recalled because there was an advertisement in there for a Marvel douche. And the people at DC thought, you know, this might be something that Marvel would take offense at. So they recalled the issue. Apparently, about 100 or so actually managed to make distribution in England. So there are some copies up on eBay right now for sale.
Yeah, I wonder if in 35 years from 1999, if Marvel can file for copyright termination against the Marvel douche.
Or, you know, maybe Marvel makes a new product line. Who knows?
And the possibilities are endless. Yeah, a really good choice. I love this series. Like you said, the sequels, not so much. It gets a little more out there. He starts really digging into other public domain characters and adding them to the roster. And after a while, the fun wears off a bit. But average Alan Moore is still better than 99% of everyone else's best.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the world that he builds, I think, is just the fantastic part about this story.
So how's this do on the market?
GPA, the 12-month average is $120, but the last sale for this book was $230. So is there something going on? Does somebody know something about this?
Is the movie on cable? Is it on HBO?
There was in 2015, they were talking about rebooting the movie and it never came to pass. So I would be very hesitant to think that Alan Moore is going to green light any kind of movie.
He has a choice. They're public domain characters.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
The census, there's 218 books in the census, of which 93 are 9.8. So a lot of 9.8s out there. There are 12 books on the census that are signed.
Interesting.
I would love, for my knowledge, Alan Moore did not sign a lot of books. And the books that he signed, I think hold value. I would love to have an Alan Moore signed book. So I don't know who signed. I wasn't able to do research into the census to find out who
did. Well, you said there was a Dynamic Forces variant, and Dynamic Forces were famous for doing signed variants. When you say you see a few signed copies, that means that there had to be a witness. So a Dynamic Forces variant wouldn't qualify for that. It would get a green label. So I would assume it's got to be Kevin O'Neill.
That's my thought too, which is.
Remember Alan Moore. There are some Alan Moore CGC signed witnessed slabs out there. There's something in the back of my mind that tells me that those exist.
There is a book, it's 100 something, I cannot remember the title of the book, but there are there is a book out there that is signed by Alan. There's always the gold and blue Miracle Man number ones, where he signed the inside cover. It gets a blue label as opposed to a yellow or a green. But he did sign and number those books. So there are books out there with his signature. I would love to just to have a yellow label with his signature on it, just because it'd be ultra rare.
Yeah, for sure. Well, good pick. Did you guys like America's Best Comics? I did. I liked Top 10 in particular. I liked Promethea, but then I lost the plot and I gave up on it after a little bit. But yeah, it was a good little sub brand of Wildstorm. It was at the same time as, you know, as Planetary was coming out from Wildstorm and The Authority. There was some good stuff in those Wildstorm books in the late 90s.
There's a trade paperback of this book. If you're interested in reading it, pick up the trade. It's the original series is definitely better than the movie. I will tell you that much.
From your lips. All right. We are going to wrap it up for this episode. Make sure you follow us at Bronze and Modern Gods on Facebook and Instagram. And if you enjoyed watching this video on YouTube, let us know by hitting that like button. Help us out by subscribing. Hit that notification bell so you don't miss an episode. And I think I'm going to pass it over for goodbyes for Richard with his standard closing tag. Richard, we'll see you next time.